Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat episode 436, and if you add those numbers up, that makes 13, which is lucky.
It's
going to be a good show.
Whoa.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Zach Ryan.
Sure, it is episode 420.
That was a while ago, and I'm joined by this man, Per Schneider.
Hey, what's going on?
This man, Zach Ryan. Hey, what's up?
Hello.
Man. And there's that man down there. Hi, Casey.
Hey.
I'm welcome back.
Thanks,
Zach. Are you having a small stroke?
I'm not gonna lie to you guys. It's been a weird day so far.
Okay.
Yep. But yeah.
You're doing good. I think this is a solid C+.
You got delicious coffee.
If it was a C+ show, you know what? I'd take it. That's all right.
You can only go up from here.
That's right. Casey, you're back on the show?
I am.
You went to South Africa?
I did.
Wow.
Why'd you go there?
I went to South Africa to visit the Monster Hunter movie set.
Ooh.
I wish I could tell you more about it, but I am not allowed.
Did you see any of the monsters?
I can't tell you.
That's dedication.
You see any of the hunters?
I can't tell you.
And that's everything we know about Monster Hunter.
I did see penguins in Cape Town, and I saw Hyraxes on Tabletop Mountain. And they are closely related to elephants.
You showed me a photo.
It's a rat, right?
Yeah.
You showed me
a photo of a Hyrax that is like the funniest little thing that I've ever seen.
Know.
And I kind of want to make it the image for the iTunes show this week.
They make really stupid faces.
I think that'd be really good.
Animals.
So if you're listening on iTunes, I hope you're enjoying that funny image of a Hyrax. Guys,
This is IGN's Nintendo Show right here every Thursday at 3 p.m. on IGN.com and Fridays at 3 p.m. on YouTube. If you're watching there, congratulations. This week, we're going to do a little recap of the Game Awards that happened last week. Brian and I were there.
Yeah, we were there.
We went down there.
I feel like aliens invaded and they replaced Zach.
Yeah, is this like a Body Snatchers thing?
Yeah, and they think we won't notice.
Everything,
you too. I'm on to you.
Everything is normal.
The tentacle foot also.
Everyone
gave you
is
away.
Fine. That's not my foot.
Is this an Echo Fighter?
Yeah. I'm the shadow. I'm the
Zach
shadow fighter
never
of Zach.
Leave dragons all over.
You can tell
desk.
Because my lack of glasses. Brian, you and I were at the Game Awards. We were in the audience.
We were.
Well, how did you find the experience of being there in the very presence of Mr. Geoff Keighley?
Oh, that specifically?
Yes.
I mean, Geoff Keighley is a great dude.
Jeff.
I know. We're spelling
Stop
it like.
It.
No, I love the Game Awards. I think it's a show that's consistently gotten better year over year.
I agree.
It's really cool being there. There's like an energy in the room, which I think is a little muted compared to like a E3 live press conference or something like that, mm-hmm. because we are wearing suits.
A little more classy.
A little more classy. But, there's still room for laughter and goofiness. And I think it's like, it's a weird show because it's consistently trying to find that balance between being like an E3 press conference and being the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
And it'll always be pushed and pulled between those things. Like when you watch the Academy Awards, they aren't like world premiere and they like
well,
show you
the
new
thing,
trailer.
Like, I think that I heard it described several times just in the course of trying to explain to my non-gamer friends what I was going to LA for. And I said it multiple times, and I heard people describe it this way as like the Oscars of games. But it will never be the Oscars of video games because the Oscars are such a serious affair.
Right.
Video games are an inherently silly medium. So yeah. I feel like it is at a bit of a juxtaposition, but it's nice to have a celebration for a medium that I hold so near and dear to my heart. And it was really cool to see so many people celebrating some of the bigger wins. Like when Celeste won for indie game, when God of War won for game of the year, you know, people were literally jumping out of their seats and hooting and hollering. I thought it was really nice.
I will say that. Two things real quick. One, we got nothing on Metroid, which is what we had hoped on, and that sucks.
Yeah, let's take a moment to issue a public apology. Last week, Pear and I and yourself and mm-hmm. Tom Marks, we said very confidently two things. We will definitely see the Metroid Prime trilogy at the Game Awards. Well, it was implied.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom said that there would probably be no wacky third-party guest characters for Smash.
Yep.
Tom was wrong.
Wrong on both fronts.
We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, but I will
nothing
say...
Nothing to apologize for.
It's true. I will say...
Apologize, damn it.
What,
sorry.
A thing that's fundamentally broken about the Game Awards, and I think a lot of awards, annual awards in the video game industry in general, is that they effectively negate to compensate for anything that comes out in December. Smash Brothers mm-hmm. just has no presence in an award show like that because effectively that list is wrapped up by mid-November. I don't even think Pokemon
okay,
made
but
it into that conversation.
So those games... So
they pull it into next year.
They pull it into next year, right? So
do they pull Smash Brothers?
Smash will be eligible for like Best Fighter, Nintendo Switch for
where
next year.
Where is Xenoblade Chronicles?
Well, that game didn't get nominated for Best Switch Game or Best RPG, even though it was within the timeline from last year mm-hmm. because that game is just not very good.
Ooh.
So, ooh, I'm kidding. I know. You guys out there, you're getting so mad because we don't talk about Xenoblade Chronicles. Mm-hmm. I apologize.
Probably
I'm sure
mad
it's fantastic.
And asleep at the same time, though, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true too. Yeah, sick burn. Yeah.
How was the moment of three men getting up on stage?
That was a good moment for three men to get on the stage. Yeah.
No
time.
Babies anywhere inside.
That was
though.
Really cool, though. I mean, you literally had the leaders of the three platform companies on stage together, and you know they all know each other and they're all chummy with each other, but you don't often see that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, that moment is perfect because you can screen cap that moment and you can put it underneath any fanboy argument on the internet and be like, if they got along for this picture, you guys can get along here. Like, it's basically, it shows you that, like, the fanboy garbage where people are like, my system's better than yours and this, is just at the bottom level. Like, it doesn't, mm-hmm. it shouldn't happen on a corporate level and it shouldn't happen on a developer level. I think, like, you don't feel like there's a war of platforms at the Game Awards. It is a celebration of the medium in general. And having all of them on stage at the same time is really cool. I would have hoped they had come out with, like, an announcement, like some sort of crossplay or, like, a video game everyone gets.
Like, hey, Reggie, you want Banjo-Kazooie?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
The three of us are here on stage to present to you the Playtendo 1.
Yeah.
Our new console. No, I thought it was really cool, and kudos to Keeley for pulling that off, to get them up there and deliver such a nice message about the gaming community at large. That being said, in an ironic turn, we're going to start the show today by talking about a system exclusive, and that is Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3.
System exclusive.
World premiere.
Which
this game.
Insane.
Yeah, it is coming. So this is one of those big curveballs that I don't think anybody saw. We had kicked around the idea of potentially seeing the oft-rumored and oft-mentioned Square-developed Avengers game at the Game Awards. Like, that was something that we had thought about in the office here for a while.
Yep.
I don't think anybody saw Ultimate Alliance coming.
No.
I love Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2. If you've not played them before, you're talking about Diablo, except with Avengers characters, right? Except with Marvel characters.
Not quite as good.
Maybe like Dauntless.
Not quite as good. Yeah. Like, what it lacks for in the in the mechanical finesse of Diablo, I think it more than makes up for in the charm of, like, oh, you're playing as your favorite superheroes.
I think Casey just nailed it. It's a lot more like Gauntlet.
Yeah.
In that way. It's kind
of loot drops, right?
Like, way more arcadey. But I love this game. It's a really fun, like, local multiplayer game, and it's perfect for Switch. And I don't think any of us expected to see exclusively on Switch.
Yeah. So also, because it's always
been developer.
Yeah.
What the heck?
So it's previously multi-platform.
Yeah. It has been on all of the major platforms in previous iterations. First Ultimate Alliance game in 10 years by the time this comes out. Previously developed by Vicarious Visions, now coming to us from Koei Tecmo and the team at Team Ninja, which is pretty wild. Like, this is a pretty big departure for them and for the series itself.
And the biggest story here to me is that this game somehow managed to get together the IPs for the X-Men, for Spider-Man, and for the Avengers all in one game, all playable alongside each other, fighting against, like, iconic villains from those series.
Right.
And that's huge. That's something a bunch of games in the last few years couldn't do because of all the legal hoops.
Because this is not the MCU either. This is based on the comic franchise, right?
Yeah.
So they can do a different kind of mashup than Marvel in the movies.
Although, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy look, you know, basically inspired by the movie design, so it gets really tricky.
Yeah.
The way that communicates is incredibly frustrating. But, like, I don't know. Maybe we'll see Venom in there, too. Like, I don't know which characters Spider-Man will bring with him, which X-Men we'll see. Like, there's a lot of crossover potential there.
Sure. Yep. Allow me to read from this press release blurb. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order, will bring together familiar heroes and villains across the Marvel Universe to battle for the Infinity Gauntlet. This unprecedented team of characters must use their unique superpowers, blah, blah, blah. So, you're talking about a Black Order game. It seems similar thematically, at least, to the Avengers Infinity War and what we assume to be the storyline for Endgame, right? Like, this quest for the Endgame, this battle against the Black Order, which is this sort of four horsemen type group. I think it's a really interesting premise, and I'm mostly just excited to have this kind of thing come to Switch.
I just want a commercial where Thanos goes, and it's exclusively on Nintendo.
And what, PlayStation and Xbox?
And everybody's gone.
They just turned to dust.
And everybody's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, Pear. That was very good. No, I think these are the kind of third-party exclusives that we haven't seen in Nintendo in previous generations, right? It's important for the Switch to have a game like this, especially one so closely tied to one of the biggest franchises on the planet, second only to maybe like Star Wars in terms of cross-medium popularity. Not a ton of superhero games going on right now, and so this is like a huge feather in the Switch's cap to have exclusively in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I say kudos to you, Spider-Man. Way to go. You really showed up for us there on the Switch. Another big announcement that we knew was coming, because we got a pair of fuzzy dice last week, but that is Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled. This is one of my favorite reveals because everybody knew that Crash was coming.
Yeah,
we had heard that in this particular moment, if you're watching the video conference or the video stream, when it switches over from the PlayStation graphics to the PS4 graphics, there was like an audible gasp in the room because of how much better this game looks. This is coming to us June 21st, 2019. But I will say that this is one of very few kart racers on Switch, but probably the most competent after Mario Kart.
Yeah, with Sonic Team, I think.
Yeah. Well, Sonic is out before the end of the year, or is that – no, it got pushed.
Yeah,
it got pushed. Yeah. So between – we got a lot of mascot racers coming to the Switch, but I will say that this particular game, Crash Team Racing, was very near and dear to my heart as a kid. I really enjoyed this game. Even as much as I loved Mario Kart, I thought this game was great. And
My favorite thing about this, and I know you love this game, but my favorite thing about Crash Team Racing are the characters.
Yeah.
There's Crash.
Yeah.
Girl Crash.
Well, don't forget about Girl Crash.
Girl Crash.
Polar Bear.
No, like the gameplay.
There's a fluffy dog.
The gameplay is good. I mean, it's a really fun racing game.
No, this is easily.
It's great to see it come to Switch, too.
I agree. Yeah, this is easily the best kart racing game ever made
if you never owned a Nintendo console in your entire life.
Exactly. But that's saying a lot, right? Because you've got Mario Kart way up here. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this podcast, just pretend my hand is very high.
And then Diddy Kong Racing.
And then Diddy Kong Racing is like, it's just like, it's like maybe like here.
I think it's like 100 miles lower.
Every other kart racer is like down here, right? Like, I mean, with the exception
Sonic,
of like
Sonic racing games have been fun.
I like the one for Sonic,
the Sonic is okay. Games, what was the one for Dreamcast? It was like wacky Toon Racers or whatever.
There's that one. Obviously, yeah. PlayStation.
Konami Crazy Racers.
Dracula in it. Competent.
And I think Snake.
The recently released Nicktoons Racer.
That's right.
Yeah. They're all bad.
So
they're all bad.
There are more kart racers out there than you think, but they like. None have ever gotten.
Yeah, but to me, it's always been Crash and Mario Kart. So I think it's cool that this is coming. I'll play the hell out of this.
We're gonna catch a lot of hell from Diddy Kong Racing fans for putting it
like Casey.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
I really like Diddy Kong Racing, but it's not a franchise anymore.
Time Trials
it should
good.
Be.
They ported it to 3DS, and you had to blow into the microphone to start the airplane.
Then Donkey Kong Racing was supposed to happen, right?
Oh God, that was on the back of the GameCube box.
Wait, it was
the back of the GameCube bong.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
On the back of the box of my launch day GameCube was a picture of Donkey Kong Racing that said coming soon, and it never did. And we got Donkey Kong Barrel Blast or whatever that thing.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. Not the same thing, though.
Not the same thing.
Another multi-platform reveal that came to us at the Game Awards. This is a big one.
This is a surprise.
By far and away, our highest performing story and game of the Game Awards this year, and that's Mortal Kombat 11. I have never been a huge Mortal Kombat guy. It's too bloody for me.
Yeah.
But I do think...
Really?
Yeah,
the trailer was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's like even the trailer itself, you know, we were sitting together, you and I, Max Goldfarb, and Alana Pierce, we're all sitting together, and I heard her at one point during this trailer just go, Jesus Christ, because I mean, it's just like, it's a bit much. Yeah. We should have some footage rolling here pretty soon, but standard fare from what we've come to expect from Mortal Kombat, people getting their heads chopped off and their spines ripped out and stuff.
I think they keep one-upping themselves on this, and it's like, I don't really know how many times you can explode the man's spine before you've seen enough of it.
But it is an incredibly violent trailer, so apologies to any PG-rated viewers out there.
Probably the most violent game on Switch. I'm trying to think of a game that's more, I mean, Mario Odyssey maybe because he steals people's souls and becomes them. That's dark. Yep. But this is straight up snuff. Like really.
Mortal Kombat has always prided itself on being over the top violent. Yeah, I mean, that was its appeal when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And it's still doing it.
It's also really awesome to have like a supremely competent, esports level, fighting game on Switch. Mortal Kombat started as this sort of like cartoony button mash thing, but in recent iterations, probably starting with like Mortal Kombat 9, it really got to be sort of a finesse game and more along the lines of like a serious fighter, you know, like with the introduction of Injustice and things like that.
Yeah,
it really
changed up the way that people think about playing these games. And now it's like a serious like esports contender. So it's cool that it's coming to Switch. It's coming on April 23rd.
Yep. It's a reveal event in January.
But I did want to ask you guys, so I kind of felt like they swept the Switch announcement under the rug, right? Like nobody, I didn't even know that this was coming to the Switch until like day or two after the Game Awards when somebody's like, well, yeah, that's on Switch too.
I didn't know for Crash Team Racing either. I mean, like the thing is with a lot of these games, you pretty much have to have like a second screen while you're watching the Game Awards to read press releases to really find out the details and everything.
Yeah. Well, I think the publisher doesn't want to like point your nose at the fact that it's on Switch, right? Because it's a multi-platform game.
Right.
And these are now examples of games that launch simultaneously, right? Whereas like we've seen ports from 360 and PS3, we're actually getting versions of games that are on the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's, I mean, this is really, really good news.
Well, the fact that they didn't make a big deal out of it is the big deal, really, because it shows that like ports of this nature are so second nature on Switch at this point that it's not a story, you know, which is
that's
cool.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And I think for us specifically as like hardcore old school gamers, we're sort of like wait a minute, I wouldn't even have expected this to come to Switch because Nintendo and Mortal Kombat have a really weird history.
Right.
The first time Mortal Kombat have a sweat code.
Yeah,
in
the
that'd be
the,
really cool.
The blood code, right? The first time we ever saw Mortal Kombat on the Super Nintendo was GIMPed, and you had to put in a code to actually see blood. Oh. Mm-hmm. And then we got really bad ports like Mortal Kombat Advance, which was awful. We got Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which came within like a month of the N64, and that was the first time they were like
Sub-Zero.
Yeah, we had originally just hit a drought on 64, and they were like, not oh, like we got game. This. It was bad. That's where we got the Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero side-scrolling game.
Hey, that was the first game that I owned for Nintendo 64.
Whoa.
That's so weird.
It was unfortunate.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah.
Man.
My mom, I asked her for a Nintendo 64 with Super Mario 64 for Christmas, and they're sold out of Super Mario 64, and she asked just like some random kid who was there, like, what's the next best game to get? And he was like, get this Mortal Kombat game.
Sub-Zero.
So, yeah, and I don't know if that...
Trilogy?
I don't know if they were... trolling my mom or what, but I came home and opened that up and was like, well.
Weirdly enough about that game, okay. Not only was it a bad game, it was A, supposed to set off like a whole bunch of spin-offs where each character got their own. Never happened. But B, it played to literally none of the strengths of the N64.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't use the joystick.
Right.
And you couldn't use multiple controllers. It was single player. So yeah, really, really dropped the ball on that one.
I know there's some people who have a soft spot for this game, but I just never got it. I never understood it because it's one of those games where in order to figure out that there isn't a platform down there, you have to jump down and die. And not in an odd world kind of Abe's Odyssey way where it's designed to quickly reset you. It's like it punishes you for dying. Mm-hmm. And it's just such bad game design. Let's never talk about that game.
Yeah,
again.
Fortunately it's 2018. Yeah, yeah, fortunately it's 2018 and we never have to talk about Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero stories ever again.
Uh-huh.
Last big announcement that I wanted to talk about from the Game Awards is of course perhaps the biggest and most relevant this week, and that is the fact that Joker from Persona 5 is coming to Switch, but it's coming to Smash Brothers.
You're correct.
Yes, he's also coming to the Switch. So this was like such a crazy reveal because you know, we get briefed on stuff occasionally and we get to kind of know like when some announcements are coming, and Andrew is close personal friends with a lot of the team at Platinum, Andrew Goldfarb, because he's one of the world's biggest Persona fans. And obviously he had no idea that this reveal was coming, and when the P5 logo went up on the screen, he sat bolt upright and was like, what is this? What's happening?
Yeah, he yelled, like, wait, sweating. What?
Yeah, it what was, is this? Yeah.
There's been a lot of like very personal, very awesome moments in my career. And I have to say, like, sitting next to him during this, even though this is something I know nothing about and don't understand, his excitement was really cool.
Look how they buried the lead. It's
I
so
know,
good.
It's
the entire
so
time,
good.
I thought this was going to be another Persona rhythm game or something like that. Or maybe Persona 5 coming to the Switch. And then it shows the Smash Bros. Logo on
I didn't
the
even
CEO.
Catch all like the silhouette.
Good. What I think is interesting is like here's a particularly niche third party character. Like Persona 5 sold pretty well, like a big hit for Atlus. But to show Joker, Andrew produced an explainer piece because even our audience is so uninitiated in terms of like, well, who is this character?
People,
why are people freaking
people
out?
People were searching who is Joker Smash?
Yeah,
like crazy.
Right. So we did an explainer piece that I'll link in the description that's very good, but this is an interesting character to start any of the DLC characters with, right? Like, if they had said, like, okay, who is the very last pick that you would pick for this sort of
totally.
Character? Yeah, it's this guy, right? Like, totally a non-sequitur. It seems like out of left field.
This, for me, this completely sold me on the DLC.
And also, it's crazy. Like, so I was on an 11-hour flight during the Game Awards.
Yeah.
When I got off, I looked on Twitter, and all I saw was the picture of the red and like and people saying, oh, Joker and Smash. I was like, people are kidding.
Yeah.
Right.
People, this is not real. Yeah. This is a lie. People are just joking about it. And I like went through the security line and immediately stopped by a trash can and pulled out my phone and looked up a trailer and saw it. And I was like, oh my God, it's real. Like someone had tweeted me, like, you'll never see it coming. And I was like,
that's so crazy.
You think a lot of people thought it was like DC Joker, like Batman's
probably.
Joker?
Maybe. Oh. I mean, based on headline alone,
on the headline. No, like Persona 5, along with The Witcher 3, is one of my all-time favorite modern-day RPGs. That game is so fantastic. And I would have never guessed it. And I've been saying it would be great to get Persona 5, the full game on Switch. It can handle it graphically and all that. But this is such a cool surprise.
I mean, it was originally a PS3 game, so the Switch should be able to handle it.
What's crazy about this is that, like, when a character gets added to Smash Brothers now, he's, or he or she is effectively, like, run through the whole Smash Brothers car wash, which is, like, you get an amiibo, and you get a stage, and you get, like, spirit stickers, and you get, like, sound files, and all this crap. Like, it's not just, like, dragging and dropping a character in there. Like, there's all that fanfare that gets built around it, too.
That was another great moment. Is about 20 minutes after this announcement, Andrew turned to me and, like, very sincerely, like, put his hand on my shoulder and goes, "We're gonna get a Joker amiibo." Yeah. He's like so excited. this is the first of the Challenger pack. He's gonna kick that off, which is very exciting news for me. I'm a big Persona guy as well, so this is very cool. I think the initial conversation around this reveal was like, "Oh, this must mean that Persona 5 is coming to Switch."
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily mean that. I wouldn't put money on it.
Persona games are on the 3DS. Yeah. You know, like there's history with Persona and Nintendo.
Yeah,
obviously.
And
you know,
Joker was technically in a 3DS game.
Yeah, Persona Q.
There's also no
Persona Q 2,
Castlevania or Metal Gear on Switch right
True.
Now.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, showing up in Smash doesn't necessarily mean that your franchise.
Although I wish it did.
Yeah. No, it's like you got, if you haven't played Persona
5. Yeah,
bring
5, the twin snakes
so good
to Switch.
This would be, and it is a crazy long game. Like we're talking 100 hours but not like bloated, like just really good storytelling and like clever things, and this would be so good on Switch. So I'm hoping it happens.
That'd be really
but
cool.
But the one thing I took away from this, and I think Reggie said something like, "Hey, this should give you an idea of like what we're thinking for the DLC
said
packs."
It's
right?
Emblematic of the approach that Mr. Sakurai and the team are talking with the DLC.
Yeah,
or taking with the DLC.
And so at first we talked about what will the next characters be, and one school of thought was lesser Nintendo characters, or
fewer Nintendo characters.
Yeah. The characters you know, but they aren't Mario and Luigi, but this sounds like maybe they are going more hardcore on third party stuff,
mm-hmm.
and like then you could imagine something like Geralt, who's been from The Witcher, who's been in all these other games already, like being included, or a character from an Assassin's Creed game or something.
Well, we kind of vaguely theorized about this last week, right? And about how in the last game we saw stuff like Ryu and I believe Bayonetta and also Cloud, right? So mm-hmm. I think there's room for heavy hitters, and I hope there's still some weird ones left.
Speaking of DLC characters, Per, you had a public service announcement that you wanted to address really quickly.
Yeah, for everybody who bought Smash Brothers already and is playing it, remember that when you bought the physical copy to register it, just go on the menu and do the kind of My Nintendo registration.
Hit the start button.
Hit the start button and bring it up, and then do that. And then if you bought it digitally, you don't have to do that. And then please, please, please check your email that you have on the account and search your email inbox for the following: thanks for your purchase of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate game, because mm-hmm. Nintendo sent out the code for Piranha Plant, the character that you get as an early adopter,
right,
in a very, very generic email. This is the kind of email that you get when you buy anything or register anything, and I completely ignored it, and a lot of people got it into their spam filters, and nobody knew that they got the codes for Piranha Plant already. Mm-hmm.
Piranha Plant's also the name of a very popular STD these days. So
that's right.
Yikes, dude.
So don't search the internet for that, but enter the code. It just, you won't get it now. It'll unlock in February when the character actually comes out.
Yeah, but you can redeem the code now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking to Goldfarb about this earlier. He couldn't find his anywhere. So, check your spam folders.
I've seen many, many people on Twitter asking, "Oh, I didn't get my email." And then when you tell them this, they're like, "Oh, crap, mm-hmm. you're right.
Yeah.
You got it.
I got to check mine after the show."
I do have a question. Will the DLC pack come with Piranha Plant, or will you have to purchase that separately? Okay.
Yeah. That's the sixth character there.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Let's move on, shall we?
Yes, sir.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Smash later in the show, but I did want to talk really quickly about the other games that we've been playing. Katamari Damacy is out December 7th, $29.99. Casey, you've been playing a little Katamari. Why don't you tell me about
that? It's out in the past?
That's right. It's coming out.
It's already out.
Last week.
Nice. Welcome to December, but, Alien.
Thank you.
You can get a demo and play the first level, but it's a remake of the original PS2 game. It's charming. It's cute.
It's so funny.
Really,
I love
fun.
Katamari.
Basically, your father, the king of the cosmos, has destroyed a bunch of stars, and you have to make new ones by gathering random stuff on Earth and then throwing them up into the sky to make stars.
I was really hoping you would give us the elevator pitch on this game.
It's
hearing people explain it is fantastic.
It's such a goofy, like, borderline psychedelic puzzler, kind of. Like, I really liked Katamari. I played a bunch of these games, different iterations, but the first one still holds a very special place in my heart. And,
best one.
Yeah, and this is a remake of that. So I played the demo before we got in here, and it feels really good. It looks great on the Switch. I give this one two thumbs up. I say if you got an extra $30 laying around and you want to buy a Switch game, go for
it. It's really fun and relaxing and silly as hell. For example, if you need to make the constellation for like Pisces, your goal is to go collect a bunch of fish.
Yeah.
So you got a big ball of fish and throw it up into the sky and it becomes Pisces.
The special thing about this game is like the concept is roll up anything into a ball and then it becomes a planet, right? And like, so you start with all these little things and it turns so big that you roll up people and they say stuff in
cows,
protest.
And buildings.
It's,
like,
it's a little weird and it's a little edgy, but.
And
it's
with that every level, you get bigger and bigger stuff.
It's the concept of like a snowball rolling down the hill, but it's collecting random household objects and then landmarks and space shuttles, everything.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about the controls on Switch. I know that that's the way
tank.
They
were. Use the tank controls, right? Two sticks. Yeah.
I'm not into that. I wish they had. More traditional streamline that a little bit.
I feel like it. That's how I remember it, and so it would be weird if it felt different. Because part of the difficulty of maneuvering this giant ball is that it controls like a tank. You have to like push these sticks backwards and forwards.
I think it's meant to feel unwieldy because you're this little prince rolling around this gigantic ball. Like it's probably unwieldy for him, so it's going to be unwieldy for you too.
And he's using his hands to roll the ball, and that's what the two sticks are. It's basically left hand, right hand.
Right.
Thank you guys for breaking down the science of this.
Yeah. No, well,
I'm very.
This is our Nintendo and physics show.
This is now the second best soundtrack on Switch after Smash.
Really good.
It's music. It's all custom and with lyrics, and it's just great.
Well, 3 out of 4 NVC cast members approve. Katamari Damacy out now.
3 out of 4 thumbs.
Out last week. And then, Per, you've been playing a little bit of Sundered Eldritch Edition.
So, Sundered comes out December 21st. The coverage, like the review coverage, is embargoed, so we can't tell you much about the Switch version at this point. But, I have some experience with the game. Played it on the PC. Came out last year. And basically, it's... brace yourself. It is a Metroidvania. I know this
shocking.
Is
first one.
This is the first
Finally.
Metroidvania.
A Metroidvania on Switch.
But it's from Thunder Lotus. It's a really talented game developer. They made Jotun.
Jotun.
You remember
such
that one?
A cool game.
So they kind of mix hand drawn art with platforming. I'm going to use the dirty word is procedurally generated levels, so don't get too mad, Zach. I know you hate that. But they apply the kind of Metroid item gating system to it. You have to unlock new areas. You get more and more power-ups, and then it's got this kind of H.P. Lovecraft Eldritch horror theme to it.
It's got a lot of like heavy metal 70s album cover too.
Yeah, it looks cool.
And then the thing I didn't get to try yet is it has 4-player co-op now in this edition. It adds a bunch of DLC that I missed too.
It looks really beautiful.
It looks gorgeous.
It's a really pretty game. It feels good, and it's got that kind of like Metroid upgrade tree that you love, where you just get more and more powers and bigger attacks, and it has giant bosses too.
You know what? I do love that tree.
Yep.
So those are a couple of games that we've been playing this week, but mostly I think we've all been playing just a boatload of Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So I have here how this next segment is called How I Became a Smash Believer, a public apology by Zach Ryan. I've been on this show for about a year talking about how I think Smash Brothers is fine and how I'm just like a casual kind of Smash boy. And let me tell you about the 20 hours that I played Smash this last couple weekend. God damn it. Last couple of days. I'm so into Smash. I love this game, and it took me a minute to really get into it, but now once I found a character that really clicked, once I started getting into World of Light, Young Link is my dude right now.
I play as adult.
Wait, Young Link or Toon Link?
Young Link.
Okay.
Yeah. Toon Link is also very good, but Young Link is a little bit OP. So,
fire arrows.
I'm just really, really enjoying this in a way that I've not enjoyed another Smash game before.
Are you playing multiplayer at all?
Yeah. And it's awesome.
Okay,
and
cool.
I really, like, I feel like I owe the community an apology because I've been sort of lukewarm about this series for a very long time.
You've been aloof.
And yeah, well, I mean, that's how most people would describe me about most things. But in particular, Smash has been sort of lower in my roster of Nintendo games, and I have to say, this quickly jumped up in the rankings of my favorite games this year, and I've just been playing the crap out of it. So,
well, to be fair, the community that is really in love with this game is not playing it like you and I are playing it at all.
True.
Like, they're playing with items off, they're not playing World of Light, they're like...
Which baffles me. I didn't know that that was a thing, and then I was playing, so I was in
the
LA...
The items off thing?
Yeah, so I was in LA for Game Awards, and I actually hung out with Terry Schwartz, our entertainment editor, or ESE of entertainment, I should say, and her husband, or fiance, Mike. And I was staying at their house. We played Smash Brothers all night on Saturday night, and all their pals were over, and they were like, turn items off, you gotta turn items off. And I was like, the items are, first of all, fantastic because they're wacky.
Right.
And secondly, they help a
people like me
really gain an advantage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was disappointed when they were telling me to turn all those items off.
Well, because, like, I mean, the sort of hyper-focused explanation of this is that they add a random element to the game that pro players don't want to deal with, which is why they turn off Final Smashes, they turn off Pokeballs, they play on, like, mostly pretty straightforward stages.
What a bummer.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, but the cool thing about this game is that it scales in any direction you want to play it. I've been playing it primarily as a single-player game. I've been playing World of Light. I've been playing Classic Mode. Just been playing random Smashes against the computer with all the items on, unlocking stuff like that. And it's fantastic to pop in and just do a couple challenges every day and check out the store and like unlock a character here and there. And then there are other people that they want to play this game as a professional, you know, a true, like, actual competitive level fighting game, and this game allows them to do that too, which I think is really cool.
That's the difference between this as a party game and Mario Party, right? Mario Party will always be a casual kind of simple board game designed to kind of screw you over in the end, like just keep the fun going, whereas like you can really customize this game. This is such a crazy toolbox of make it the experience you want, basically. And we play it at home. We play it with items on with the kids as well. We played way too many hours.
It's also with the suspend feature on Switch, and in handheld mode. This has all the sort of fixings of like an excellent mobile game. Mm-hmm. The kind of thing you can pick up and play for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'll be on a train, or I'll be like, I'll hop on an airplane, or I'll be waiting somewhere for something, and I'll just pop up my Switch and do a couple of matches and Smash, and then go on with my life. And the cool thing is, even if you die or you lose, you get knocked off the stage, you get some coins, or maybe you unlock a spirit, or maybe you unlock a character, or you get challenged by something, or something in the store opens up. Like, they're always sort of giving you...
Yeah, you're constantly being rewarded. Yeah. And I think... So, I'm not alone in this sentiment. I've heard a lot of people that are not hardcore Smash fans talking about how much they love the new Smash. And I think part of that is thanks in part to World of Light being more of almost an RPG approach to this
I've
genre.
I've actually been having
a lot of fun
playing World of Light with my boyfriend. So we will hand off the controller to each other. Like, if one of us loses, we'll hand off, and then they can try with a different character.
Right.
And we kind of like strategize together, like, what spirits would be the best.
Sure.
And like, okay, you need to stop smashing your face into Dr. Wily for 2 hours and go get something else and come back later.
Yeah.
And,
I found myself doing that a lot in World of Light too, where I like keep repeating the same challenge over and over, thinking like, oh, I can definitely finish this thing.
So
and
close.
One of my friends fought Dr. Wily for 6 hours.
That's too long.
Oh my God.
That's too long.
You need to stop. Go get different
The funny
spirits.
Thing is, like, all you have to do is really, you switch some spirits around and the whole dynamic changes. Like, I played a couple where I was like, you know, there's wind blowing like crazy, and I kept getting knocked off the stage.
Those
and
suck.
And
That's
stubbornly,
one of the first ones I played.
Yeah. And stubbornly, I restarted it 20 times, and then I was like, what am I doing? And I went to my stickers, and one of my stickers was like, wind has no effect on you.
Yeah.
And I just went back on the stage and whooped some ass, and I was like, okay, great.
Yeah.
This is so cool.
Yeah, I think the character customization element, the ability to choose your own characters, in World of Light, kind of custom, like, there are some things, some enemies in World of Light that I want to fight with Link.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some times when I need to be like a little faster, a little more agile, so I'll fight as Mario. And I haven't unlocked a bunch of characters yet. I have like maybe 6 characters in World of Light. Mm-hmm. But even in those 6 characters, I have enough opportunity and options to, between character select and customization sticker select.
Yeah.
Like, it gives you enough options and enough leeway to kind of shape a almost like a custom character in this particular instance, which I think is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been with this edition, I've heard a lot of criticism that the takes a long time to unlock the characters, but I actually really like that because it forced me to not just play as Link.
Yeah.
For, you know, I just kind of always went back to Link with this one. Once I unlocked Ryu and Ken, I played as them for a while. I've played as the Belmonts which, you know, I don't think I would have done if everything had been unlocked because I didn't want to get beaten by my kids, right?
Right. It gives you an opportunity to sort of appreciate things as you get them.
Yeah.
Like I got Mega Man and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Mega Man's in this game. And then like with him comes his whole suite of personality and all his like special moves and his stage and music and stuff like that. The weird thing about unlocking, which is really interesting, is that people have been tweeting out and sharing in the NVC Facebook group, screens of their character selects, stage. And everyone's looks different because everyone has a sort of different path through this game. If you play as on classic mode with Yoshi and I play as Link, we will unlock completely different characters. If you only go through World of Light and you go left and I go right, we'll get different characters. And so the way that works is that World of Light, you can unlock characters that will feed into your regular Smash game, but unlocking regular characters through Smash don't feed back into World of Light.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So there's all these different ways you can get there. But the biggest argument is whether or not that should even be a thing, because the game starts you with 8 characters from the N64, and there are 74 total in the game. And I was talking to my friend Ryan Scott last night, who just wants to play, just wants to play pro level, right? He doesn't want to do items, he doesn't want to do World of Light, nothing like that. And he was like, I just want to be able to start this game and play everybody. And he can't. Mm-hmm. And so for tournament level people who want to just pop their Switch in or like go somewhere and be like, oh, do you guys have Smash set up for us to play? They can't unlock their characters because it starts with so few and you have to unlock something like 68 characters, 66, whatever the math is, just to get to all of them. And say you want someone like Bayonetta or Pichu, that's like, it could be 20 hours of grinding or like 10 hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
So,
I think as a consequence or a result of me being more of a casual Smash fan and not really knowing like who my main character was. Cause like anytime that I've played Smash previously, I just pick whoever I think looks coolest, right? Yeah. So I typically play as like Link or Mega Man or, you know, something like that. But the more I played World of Light, the more I was like, oh, I really want to learn the nuances of this game and understand like who works best for me as a character.
Yeah.
But the unlocks in World of Light are so slow and it takes like 15 challenges in between when you might have a character battle to unlock your next character.
Yeah.
And then that character may or may not be somebody that really clicks with you, right?
Right.
So I spent all day Saturday just playing World of Light mode, but then somebody was telling me like, oh, well, you unlock a character after almost every iteration of classic. So I started just storming classic mode and unlocking like a bunch of characters in classic.
And then also playing through classic mode will store your button inputs.
Yeah.
So you can go do like a one stock versus mode and that'll unlock characters really fast for you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We have a full strategy in our wiki, so look up the Super
Smash
Brothers.
Whoa. Time out. Mm-hmm. That's not your responsibility to plug the wiki. That's Casey's job.
Google Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Wiki IGN and
it should
come up and you can see a comprehensive guide of how to unlock every character.
And we got a map also of World of Light. If you are chasing a particular character, you can unlock them through that mode, so we'll tell you where on the
map.
And
also
they are.
If you specifically want a character, we have charts showing you the easiest way to do that as well.
Like certain characters will drive a path to a specific unlock, right?
Yeah.
You and I were talking about this yesterday, Casey, about how the unlocking stuff is actually really weird because you will play a bunch of matches in Smash and then you get challenged by like Bayonetta and she'll whoop your ass. And then you'll go back into the Games and More section where a tiny door appears in the corner where you get an opportunity to challenge them again. So, sometimes that door is not there. Sometimes if they beat you, you don't get a chance to play them again.
Well, it's on a timer, right?
Yeah.
So it refreshes every so often. Mm-hmm. It allows you to challenge those characters again. So being bad at Smash meant that as I was playing through each of these characters in classic mode, I would get to the challenger approaches screen and it'd be like, all right, now I get to fight, you know, Young Link, or now I get to fight Snake or something like that and unlock him. And then I just get killed for a while. I was like, this sucks because now do I need to go back through and play classic mode again with this character to see that challenge again? Or like, how do I get that challenge back? Right.
Sometimes you're doing a classic mode thing. It's like a goof. You're playing as Yoshi and you get challenged by somebody really hard and you're like, I'm bad at Yoshi.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have to fight Snake the first time.
And that's where I was going. So like I randomly on Sunday when I was just storming through classic mode, character after character, I like got up to grab food or something. And when I came back, I had exited out of that menu and I noticed that little door, the challenger approaches door. And I was like, oh, is that a way for me to challenge all the ones that I've lost? And I got to select the character that I was good at.
Yeah.
And then I started winning against those characters. But it's awesome because those battles are difficult and it puts you through a gauntlet of these really tough fights. Mm-hmm. So I got like pretty good with one or two characters. And I just love that aspect of like, I didn't even know that was a thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. And then it just so happened that I noticed it on the screen. But it highlights a bigger issue that I have with this game, in that it's really bad at telling you how to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's
like,
for
it's
sure.
really, really bad at letting you know exactly what things. Here we go.
Which is why you have things like wikis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but purposely too, right? Like they made the unlock cycle a little harder this time. Like
right.
In you know, previously you'd be able to cheese it by falling off the stage and killing yourself. And there's some people who say they have success with this and think that you can just do that over and over, but the game actually does require button inputs mm-hmm. too. So you probably played another mode and, you know, tapped a lot of buttons with right. four players, and that actually lets you do the cheesing.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful with, you know, how much you defend that.
Casey,
you were telling me something about the difficulty ramp up.
Yes.
In unlocks.
So every time you unlock a character, the next challenger will be more difficult. So the last
rules.
Yeah.
So the last challenger you have, like the last opponent that you have to unlock, will be incredibly hard to fight.
That's awesome.
And this is something that, like, I don't think I noticed that much. Usually the second time I fight someone, like, I don't have an issue. But for mm-hmm. someone who's not that great at Smash, like, is this something that's very prohibitive? Like, will they not be able to unlock the last character?
Yeah,
like,
I've
had friends who a Palutena was the last person that they unlocked, and they just cannot beat her.
Yeah, okay. I had to fight Peach like 6 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think this is indicative of like the kind of pushback that the game does in sort of gating off all these characters. And to that, I'm totally sympathetic to like the hardcore community who just wants to get to mm-hmm. like the fireworks factory basically and get everybody.
Nice. So good Simpsons reference. I appreciate that.
I did talk to Alex DeBailey who runs CEO Community Effort Orlando, which is a big fighting game tournament in Orlando. And he told me a little bit about like what they have to do to prepare. And he said major events like CEO have it easier than most because we use an equipment supplier, Gaming Generations, to rent systems that can come with everything unlocked, which carries over to every event they work with. For those not so fortunate, they have to make the task of somewhat of community building night, like a pizza night with friends, unlocking it all together. It is tedious, but once it's done, you're set for the foreseeable future.
Oh my God.
Huh. Interesting.
So they have like basically like
they have
pizza
companies.
And unlock farms.
Yeah.
Nintendo should have just sold a separate SKU in the eShop. That's the tournament edition.
Yeah.
That's all unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good idea.
It would
idea.
Make so much more sense.
I actually didn't even think of that.
Like they do with their little cheesy special edition NES games, right? Where
totally.
They have a save state.
Yeah, like the SP. No, that's actually, because I've been like racking my brain on how you actually do solve that problem. And I think that's the best way.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I did want to go round robin really quick and talk about characters that we're really enjoying playing as, starting with Pear. Who are you playing as?
I really like the Belmonts, and I've been playing as the two Street Fighter boys. Again, my main was always Link,
mm-hmm.
but really digging them. And then I've been trying to learn and play more. And like sometimes I'll run into like Mr. Game & Watch. I'm like, I don't think I'll ever be good with this character. Yeah. Or even King K. Rool. Like I like uppercutting, you know.
Me too.
My kids, that sounds wrong, but with King K. Rool, you just got this stupid helicopter recovery mode, and like some of the people in the office here swear by that character because of that recovery.
Yeah,
but I just can't handle it.
He has definitely made an appearance on our list of most OP characters.
He's very strong, right? Like
Which is coming later this week. Watch for that. Who else? Anybody else?
No. Yeah, and those are the big ones I'm really digging so far.
I love Toon Link. I'm playing as Toon Link and Young Link, kind of like back and forth, trying to figure out the nuances between the two of them. I love Mario. I think Mario's a really great character. Mm-hmm.
His up B is awesome.
Awesome.
I love that uppercut.
I'm really having a good time playing as Simon. I haven't played as Richter Belmont yet, but I've played quite a few matches as Simon, which is, he's really great.
Best Final Smash,
yeah,
I think.
I think so too, yeah.
So good.
And then I also really like Inkling. I got a couple of matches in with Inkling, and I enjoyed that a lot.
Really? Like,
that's surprising.
That one confuses me.
They're a little bit more technical than like other characters.
Yeah.
You have to be cognizant of how much ink you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really like.
Didn't even know that, so maybe I don't know how to play as Inkling.
So you hold shield and then press B, and you'll refill your ink and be able to use your moves at their most powerful state again.
Have you tried like some of the sword fighters like Marth or Roy and
the
Fire Emblem?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you'll probably really like them because they're similar to Link and the way they handle.
Yeah, Link, classic Link, I guess man Link is like
adult.
He's a little too slow for me. He's like a little too floaty, like a little too slow.
Yeah.
I like young Link because he can dash in and get off like a quick sword combo and then back out and throw a boomerang on his way out.
Yep.
Yeah, adult
feels really
Link's
good.
Dash attack is just really slow and leaves you super open if you don't hit it.
Yep. Brian, who are you playing as?
Mario is who I started with, and it was awesome because I got to unlock a ton of characters like that. He's quick. I love his up B. His recoveries are cool. Just wailing on dudes from a distance with fireballs is great.
Bless you.
And then I switched over to Link, and because he's rocking the classic tunic, the adult Link. I love his up B. The sort of helicopter swirl thing is great. Softening enemies from a distance with a bow and arrow, and then walking up and just knocking them off the edge.
He's got the remote bomb. I'm not a
fan of the remote bomb.
Me neither. Yeah. It's one extra thing to keep track of.
If it was mapped to one button, I think it would be a little bit better. Like if you could drop that remote bomb and leave it somewhere and then tap, you know, R1 or something to detonate it rather than do another down B, I think it would be much more effective.
And then I just started getting back into Rob. Rob was one of my favorites in the last two. No one really plays as him, but he's got another one of those like really awesome up B smashes. His like all of his weird helicopter.
Did anyone see the GIF that was floating around this morning of Rob dabbing on his way out?
No.
So Rob, I guess when he drowns, like if you're playing on a level that has water, if he falls into the water, he'll start sinking, and then as he's sinking into the water, he goes.
Oh my god! Well, apparently really there's some characters that like drown instantly. Did you guys know about this? Like Sonic is one of them.
Yeah,
like,
characters that can't handle water in their games. Yeah,
Sonic goes underwater for like entire hours.
Yeah, but that's different.
It's
you
running
can't
underwater.
Touch regular water.
Casey, who are you playing as?
Underwater water.
I'm playing primarily as Pikachu. And we learned on our stream yesterday that Pikachu is incredibly buoyant. So Pikachu will just float back up to the surface if he gets knocked down, even with something like a Ganondorf smash attack.
Wow,
which is very useful for me because then I won that match.
Cool.
But I never really played with Corrin in the last Smash, but I started playing with Corrin after we unlocked him, and I'm actually really liking Corrin. He's got some really interesting moves, and I'm not really sure.
That's the guy with like the zigzag sword, right?
That's Robin.
Oh.
How dare Corrin, you confuse all those exactly
Corrin is
Fire Emblem
a
characters.
Corrin is a dragon from Fire Emblem Fates.
A dragon?
Yeah, it's a dragon.
How odd that you would select a dragon character.
Yeah. So when you counter someone and it successfully hits, he actually turns into a dragon like and throws dragon. Everyone out with water attacks.
Okay.
And he uses a lot of his moves. When he strikes forward, his arm will like turn into his dragon leg. So it has a lot of reach. And he just does really interesting, crazy stuff. I have no idea if he's actually good or not.
So he's a man that turns into a dragon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, I have not played a lot of Fire Emblem.
Or a lady. He's also a lady, just like Robin. Is
right.
And woman. Yeah.
The Echo Fighters.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. But...
Couple things that I did want to point out before we have to move on. But there's a couple things that I did want to point out that aren't great about this game that I've discovered so far. First of all, online is broken.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks.
It's awful.
It's so laggy and so terrible to play. Oh, it's awful.
I played on Hotel Wi-Fi over the weekend, right now. And it was fine.
So fighting one-on-one in an arena that you set up yourself is usually okay.
Mm-hmm.
More than one person, it just completely breaks.
Yeah.
It's unplayable.
It's really bad.
My issue is it doesn't tell you how. I saw my friend Mitch Dyer playing online, former IGN editor, and I couldn't just play with him. And I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you how to do that. And we tried to do that, and then we didn't do that. So that's weird.
Yeah, the whole online
thing. He was playing Smash, and it was
So when we were playing it in LA this last weekend, we were trying to set up. We had two switches that had Smash on the same Wi-Fi network, and we were trying to set up like rooms that we could play against each other, like in an 8-person Smash, and it just didn't work. We just couldn't get it to work at all, which was a real bummer. And also, so then we decided, well, we'll play 8 players on one Switch. The only way to do that without 2 GameCube adapters and GameCube controllers is to play, have everyone, all 8 players, play on a single Joy-Con sideways, which is the worst.
Why is, so you can't
so it
give
counts,
everyone,
it counts.
The maximum sinking of controllers you
right.
can do.
Yeah, so it hits a ceiling because it counts a pro controller as 2 controllers. Two.
What?
Yeah, and it counts every, like, a full set of Joy-Con as 2. So I think the max that you can do is 4 with Joy-Con and pro controller.
If you open up the pro controller, there are 2 little Joy-Con inside.
No.
You're a liar.
I'm kidding. No, but that's
unbelievable.
That's a concept.
I felt for it.
Unbelievable.
I'm a global man. I felt for it.
And Zach, so that was one of the things I said. It's like, oh, well, you can just use GameCube controllers and GameCube adapters. And Zach pointed out to me that that cost $250.
Yeah,
not everyone has 8 GameCube controllers lying around.
Buy, like if you're a big Smash fan and you're trying to have Smash parties all the time, you can buy 8 GameCube controllers and the 2 adapters, but it's going to run you about $250.
Right.
Yeah.
I have not played Joy-Con sideways yet. Is that playable?
Why would it? Why would you ever do that?
Yeah, no.
It's so awful.
Because you want to play a player.
So I've been playing on the Pro Controller, and it's hard for me to play in handheld mode after playing on the Pro Controller because that controller feels so good, and the button mapping is just different enough that like it throws your rhythm off.
I'm not even bothering with it because this happened to me with a 3DS version. I try to play it, and playing it in handheld mode. Because so much of this game is muscle memory.
Yeah.
So that when you start playing with other controllers, it could mess with your game and the normal controller that you use.
I probably played 15 hours in handheld mode. I did an unboxing on IGN recently of this thing called the Satisfy Grip, which adds basically like Xbox One style grips inside. And it's so comfortable and it's really, really awesome.
I was thinking about that, but like specifically for Smash for this game because adjusting the way that your grip, like how it fits in your hand, is great, but it doesn't do anything for the button layout. And it's the fact that the buttons are so close to each other that's what throws me off.
Well, my thing is like trying to hit that stick to do smash attacks on the right, and how the satisfied grip accommodates for that by angling it.
Yeah.
Then I jumped over to playing on my TV, and I don't think I'll go back.
You should, if you haven't busted out the GameCube controllers again. I started by playing the Pro Controller, and then we hooked up the GameCube controllers, and it's just, it's still the right way to play it. It just feels more like the Y button is. Mm-hmm. It just feels like that's where it should be when you're jumping.
Yeah,
a bunch of people
so much better.
A bunch of people in the NVC Facebook group said that the Power A wireless GameCube controller is the way to go. Have you guys checked that one out?
Yeah, so
I want to look into that.
So I have it. You can buy them at Target and like probably Amazon and stuff, but they have a wired version, which is only like $25, and a wireless version, which is like, I think about 50.
Do you neither have Rumble?
I don't know.
Okay. Cause I think that like with third party stuff, they're tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I got the wireless one cause I assumed that I might have a copy during my travel, and I refused to play that game with anything besides a GameCube controller. Mm-hmm. So I needed something that I could play with, the Switch in tabletop mode.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels, they call it an improved GameCube controller because they slightly raise, they have an additional Z button on the left, and they're slightly raised while they lowered the R and L shoulder buttons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise it feels very similar. Like the buttons feel pretty different, and also they feel pretty the same, but the left stick you can click in and which, I don't know, weirded me out personally. Cause it's something that I have done accidentally in playing action games on like the PlayStation.
Yeah,
I will accidentally click in my stick and ruin my stuff.
Clickable.
Exactly. But this one does.
Well, the thing is, Smash is a very calm, serene, calculated game that doesn't at all involve manic button presses.
Yeah. But for someone with, bigger hands, that controller is more comfortable for them.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad you guys are enjoying Smash as much as I am, because it looks like this might be the only Smash that we get for quite some time.
No!
That's true. So we got some leaked details, not we personally, but we found some leaked details from a forthcoming weekly Famitsu interview with Masahiro Sakurai, where he said that there will be no Smash successor for probably 10 years, he hypothesizes.
Yeah.
So that means that we're not looking at another Smash on the Nintendo Switch. Whatever is coming Smash-wise will probably not happen until the next iteration of Nintendo hardware.
2028.
I feel like just makes sense.
Yeah.
We don't need another Smash on the same console.
There's never been multiple Smashes on one console,
Well, what does this mean though? And by the way, it's not uncommon that Nintendo sometimes puts one of their puppies to bed, and you don't get a sequel, right?
Like Nintendo
7 years of not
like a German
Metroid
idiom.
Games.
I've never heard of that.
Yes, like we haven't gotten Metroid games for a long time after Super Metroid, for example, and obviously it's been a bit of a wait on the console side. But like, first of all, that might be him saying that, and then the Nintendo business people go like, best selling franchise. Don't think so, right?
Like, this is a weird metaphor, but like after I became a dad, a lot of people were like, so when are you going to have another kid? And I was like, never again.
Yep. Yeah.
But then
yeah.
a couple of years go by and you're like, maybe you could go through all that.
But like, he may think that it may come to fruition, but what that could also mean is that they do have a plan to keep these games alive for a while. And like, as we've seen with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I don't know how many years it will be between Mario Kart games, but that came out on a couple of years ago. That's like more than 4 years old, right?
I bet you we get another Mario Kart on Switch.
Yeah, I think so too. It's
before the end of its life cycle.
But like Smash, with Smash, maybe they'll keep updating every year. They'll add some new stuff or maybe a new mode, and that game could live live for a long time, like a Minecraft or Fortnite or whatnot. And then the next console comes
Street
out,
Fighter
and
5.
Here is Smash Ultimate again, but now it includes all the DLC, right? Like they could play that again.
They're already toying with eventizing moments of it too. Like there's a thing coming up soon where like certain spirits will get easier to get for like a 3-day weekend.
Oh.
Like they can start doing stuff like that forever, basically.
Yeah.
And that'd be really cool.
And think about how hard it would be to make Smash feel fresh again after you've built this mega game with that many characters.
Yeah. I mean, this game is definitely more of a platform than any of the other Smash games have been, I feel like. So, well, we are quickly running out of time, but I did want to save some time to play my favorite game, which I like to call the Question Block.
That's not a game, I think.
Game of the year.
Is Question Block Game of the Year?
Nominated.
Yes, it is.
Nominated.
You just won it.
Here we go. Javier Bonet writes in and asks, what are some of your favorite video game memories during the holidays? I already shared my sad story about Sub-Zero, but what are some video game memories that you guys have around Christmas?
So I was on the Nintendo Power podcast recently. Sorry to cheat on you guys.
Wow.
Rude. What? They're good people.
No, that's
I shared this story, but my very first kind of gameplay moments with my kids are, you know, happened during Christmas with an import copy of The Wind Waker. And my daughter was really tiny, could barely walk, and somehow the visuals of that game really captured her. And like we played through that entire game together. She was really tiny. I'd give her the controller, she'd have Link run around on an outside island where nothing really attacks you, eventually fell into the water, and Link starts drowning, and she goes, oh no! And she throws away the controller.
Oh my
every
God.
Time. But like she, like, you know, she still plays Nintendo games, she has a Switch, and I kind of feel like her love affair with Nintendo started at that point. Mm-hmm. But it also showed me how cool it would be to play with kids.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
That's so cool.
Ryan?
I don't know, because like I've been weird. I always get consoles like the day they come out, which is never on
Christmas
Day.
Yeah. Yep.
And like I've been working in the industry for like 13 years now, and so I've just been getting my own games when I want them. But as a kid, it was always like you waited all year to get a game. And I remember one specifically was Ninja Turtles 2 for the NES, which was like based on the arcade game where they added all these foot soldiers. It was like multiplayer. And I had a dream that I got it, and then I ran into the other room and it wasn't there. And I woke up and I was like really upset about it. My mom was like, Christmas is not till tomorrow. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I went to bed, woke up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, ran in the other room and it was there. And I remember just playing it all weekend and calling friends over and just like fighting over who gets the pizza and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
it's awesome.
So with me, the year the Game Boy Advance came out, I went to my mom and I told her I want a Game Boy Advance for Christmas. And she said, oh, honey, like, I'm sorry. I don't know if we can like afford that for this year. And I was like, oh, well, what about Santa? Like Santa can get it.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, well, I don't know if that's going to happen. That's when I learned. Sorry. But anyway, Christmas came around and I opened up my presents and I got a Game Boy Advance with a Harry Potter game, and I was so happy, and I knew then that my parents really loved me because they probably fought really hard to get that Game Boy Advance.
That's really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And where is it now?
It's actually in my Nintendo drawer underneath my TV in my living room.
Is it all scratched?
It's still playable. I still got a worm light for it.
Those don't break. Yeah, exactly.
The next question comes from Patrick John, and he asks, what's the next Mega Man game? Mega Man 12, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Brothers Ultimate.
I'm going to go ahead and put my money on Mega Man 12, John. Patrick, so moving right along, Anderson Allen Camargo asks, biggest disappointment of the year, ?
Mega Man 11?
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Let's see, I mean,
I liked Mega Man 11 a lot, actually. Yeah.
I would, you know, I've had some big disappointments on other platforms, but I wish Switch had seen a couple more releases, like new releases, so I wouldn't have had to go to so many indie games at the same time. It's kind of cool to discover some of them late, you know?
Switch really, like, sprinted at the finish line.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was two big games. Like, the indies did a lot of heavy lifting this year, and then at the very end, they're like, Pokemon and Smash! And we're like, yeah, Nintendo!
So the middle of the year, I felt like we needed a little bit more stuff to play.
Yeah. Mine's no Metroid Prime Trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, even more so the fact that we were so confident about it last week and when we didn't see it. But I'm hoping Sam Claiborne brought this up actually earlier this week that Nintendo has a history of doing like a Christmas drop where like NES Remix did that on Christmas. There's a couple other things that they were just like, and it's available right now.
And you and I were talking about that the other day and how that probably won't happen because this is Prime Trilogy is the kind of game that would probably get a physical release.
Yeah.
And so cool,
way to be
a
downer, Brian. Thanks for that. Yeah.
You'll probably get Box Boy.
Yeah. Keep that disappointment going for you, Zach.
Casey, what about you?
I'm disappointed that Smash Online is broken because I have a ton of friends from all over the country that I would love to play with.
Yeah. It'll be fixed in due time, I'm sure.
If not top men.
Brian Hendricks writes in and asks a question for Pear.
Top man from Mega Man?
Top man. What is Pear's favorite new amiibo and your favorite amiibo functionality?
Ooh, oh god, I got the Octolings, the three new Splatoon ones. Mm. I've got who do I get?
Ridley.
I get Wolf, Ridley, the Splatoon Inkling as well. The new Splatoon ones are absolutely spectacular.
They're so awesome.
The Octolings, especially the dude with the brush, like the paint effects on it look really, really good.
The squid guys started so low to the ground, the green and the orange ones, and they've just been getting like crazier and taller, like, and their poses are just wildly
just
like
paint splatter.
Yeah, it's just like really dynamic. They're awesome, awesome figures.
Ridley is really cool because, looks so different. You love Ridley because it's a dragon, right? But it looks
Ridley's
so different.
More like a lizard man.
Yeah, he's like a bird.
You know,
like all those winged lizards that you guys have.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. And Wolf is really cool because he's got that stance. He's got that really super aggressive. I'm gonna get you. Stance.
Star Fox's dad?
No.
Who's that?
No.
That's the same enemy.
It's a bad
Star Fox is a fox. Yeah. And Star Wolf is a wolf.
Yeah, are you bringing reality into a game about animals that fly in space?
Yes.
Yep.
I don't think so.
Last question.
They're really, really good. They're so far ahead of the original launch amiibo.
Yeah.
Like, no more peace stands.
You and I were like talking about that the other day. Like, you put that next to the Link amiibo that they launched with, and it's where he's got that piss stand with him.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
So much better.
They've come
now.
So far.
You don't piss in a perfect rectangle? Carl DeNovio, our friend, writes in and says, which Smash Brothers character would smell the worst in real life?
Ooh.
Wario.
Ridley.
I would say Donkey Kong. He's just a big stinky monkey.
Or K. Rool.
Jigglypuff. Right? Always sleeping.
No, Jigglypuff.
So here's the thing. Animals usually don't smell that bad.
What?
You get the worst. I don't know. Like, if an animal isn't...
Snake lives in a box. It's gotta be Snake.
You know,
he smokes too.
He hides there.
Wario's, one of his moves is a fart.
Yeah.
Oh, like, Wario is a good
And he eats garlic all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he probably you know, if you eat a lot of garlic, you will sweat garlic smell.
Yeah,
just okay.
My friend had a roommate that had that problem.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so it's between Donkey Kong and Wario. We agree.
Okay, fair enough.
I still think it's K. Rool. It's just disgusting.
K. Rool is pretty gross,
alligators
but he goes in the water
bad.
A lot.
Yeah, he lives in the water.
Alligators don't really smell. Alligator,
knows. She's from Florida. Yeah. She's friends, close personal friends with some alligators.
Alligator poop, though, on the other hand.
Okay.
Do you miss eating alligator?
I had some crocodile in South Africa, and it was very delightful.
Really?
Yeah.
I had alligator when I went to Florida. It was really good.
Yeah.
Like
it's like fried
things.
Chicken.
We've really lost thread here, guys.
NVC.
NVC.
King K. Rool would be most delicious. Wario would be the smelly.
Oh, we really should do that
show
feature.
On IGN. We're not going to do that feature. I got to wrap the show up. Everybody stop talking. Guys, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for talking about all this wacky that we got going on. This is IGN's Nintendo Show, NVC, right here every Thursday at 3 p.m. on IGN.com and every Friday on YouTube at 3pm.com. What?
Yeah.
Thanks for watching. We'll catch you next week when you can.
Get the thing.
Get it.
That's alien Zach. He like sometimes he shuts down in mid-sentence and he has to like access like the memory banks of what humans would say.
.com.
Yep.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.